The Geek Cave, brought to you by BuzzTime. Great minds drink alike. Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past so you can look rad today. And GameStop, power to the players. Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers, lose the wizard hat, and ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, O searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top-secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome to the Geek Cave Movies Podcast. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
I'm Chad. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from your past. Yes, yours, so you can look rad today.
I thought this looked familiar.
BuzzTime, great minds drink alike, and GameStop, power to the players.
Thank you, sponsors.
So,
we love you.
As much as we like having our good time and doing the fun things, we're going to start with a bit of serious in the movie segment. Zack Snyder has stepped away from the post-production duties on Justice League. Joss Whedon has taken over. There's a few scenes left to shoot, and most of the editing, post-production type stuff will be done under his direction. It's not suddenly going to be a Joss Whedon movie. It's kind of required that he maintain the tone, the film style, and so forth that Snyder had. The reason is because Zack Snyder's daughter, 20 years old, suicided. She died by suicide. And that last piece is only important because we at the Geek Cave, we want to remind you that help is available. You know, call a friend, call a relative, call a doctor, call a spiritual leader, call somebody. Mm-hmm. If you need to, call 1-800-273-8255. That's the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. They've got 24/7 coverage. Do not make that choice. Don't suffer by yourself on that. This is one of those things where right now the Snyder family is going through the single greatest hardship that they will ever face.
Right. A parent shouldn't have to bury their child.
You know, no.
Ever. And it's, I'm not even talking about issues of selfish or otherwise. It's just this notion of, there are resources to help.
You don't have to make a permanent decision.
Right. So there is that. And we want to make sure that that's out there. You know, we'll ease ourselves into comedy now because it's hard to just jump right in. So Tom Holland of soon to be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You know, feature length film fame. Has been cast to play young Nathan Drake in the Uncharted movie that will likely not get made until it's too late. Supposedly, the movie is going to be an adaptation of the flashback sequence from Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception, where Nathan meets Sully. I'm kind of okay with that as a story.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, I can see that.
But I'm also sort of not.
I'm just...
They did it in the game.
Yeah, that and... Tom Holland, I don't know why he causes me such internal controversy. I think it's because his voice doesn't sound like it matches the rest of his body. It sounds like, because he looks like he's like 19, 20, 21, long mm-hmm. in there, but he sounds like he's 14.
So he's like Rick Astley.
Yeah, I guess. Well, after a while...
Flip-flopped.
Yeah.
Because Rick Astley looks like he's 13, 14.
I know, but he sounds
like he's 19, 20.
It's just he's this scrawny little white guy with a voice that you're like, no way.
I don't know. It's a personal thing. It's nothing against Tom Holland as an actor.
As an actor, I think he does a fine job. Personally, I probably would have tried to get Alden Ehrenreich, who's going to play the young Han Solo.
Yeah.
I think I would have gone that direction more. You know, if you're going to play, you know that kind of kind of thing, you may as well just do all of his stuff.
Get Andrew Garfield.
Oh, there you go.
Since Tom Holland stole Spider-Man from him, he can steal Nathan Drake from
him. How about we just have a regular Uncharted movie with Nathan Fillion as Drake and Bruce Campbell as Sully? Can we just...
I would watch that.
I would watch that. I mean, Nathan Drake...
I want that as a TV series.
Fillion's a bit old to be Nathan Drake, but I would watch the hell out of that.
Well, not compared to Campbell Sully.
No, no, you're right. I'd still watch the heck out of that.
And it doesn't have to be like first adventure.
It's better than what they were thinking of, which was like either De Niro or Al Pesci. Joe Pesci.
Al Pesci.
Al Pesci.
Joe Pesci.
Yeah, he's Joe's lesser known
brother.
Yes. Al Pesci.
Either of you guys know the name Randall Stephenson?
Nope.
Nah.
Yeah, most people don't. He's the CEO of AT&T, and he was that guy. Yeah, he was speaking at J.P. Morgan's Global Technology, Media, and Telecom Conference. You know, the conference with the world's worst acronym.
Gesundheit.
Thank you. Now, during that speech...
That sounds like me when I try to beatbox.
So during that speech, though, that he was giving, he entertained the thought that folks that watch television on their phones may be better served by having longer episodes pared down for easier consumption. Now, I can understand the point of this. You know, you stare at itsy-bitsy eye strain-o vision. You know, an hour-long episode is going to really seem like a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so the example he used was to optimize Game of Thrones, where a 60-minute episode may be better experienced on the tiny screen if edited to 20 minutes.
Hold on a second.
I got a joke coming. So.
Okay, all right.
Now, I'm against this for the same reason that I'm against removing verses from songs. You know, the entire picture means something. You know, the whole thing needs to be taken in context. But I get where he comes from. You know, I tend to watch news stories rather than complete shows. I tend to watch, you know, the goofy skits from late night rather than watch the entire thing. I get that. But these shows are built in a way to allow that kind of cafeteria consumption, you know, without sacrificing any of their pieces. If you cut up Game of Thrones to 20 minutes, either you're going to get 20 minutes of sex or 20 minutes of killing or 20 minutes of nothing terribly interesting going on.
Those first two sound pretty good, though.
The first one is my favorite, by far.
Yeah,
there is a supercut on YouTube of just the deaths, and it's like 18 minutes long.
Jeez.
And it has a little counter. On Pornhub, probably.
Again, don't look for a Geek Cave channel on that.
Yeah, we don't have a Geek Cave channel on Pornhub.
You know, I'm pretty sure they forgot about it until now.
No, I actually got an email. I got an email. After that episode went up at geekcavepodcast@gmail.com, which is our official email address, we got an email asking us where the channel was. Because they couldn't find it. And they wanted to know if there was anime on it.
You know, the funny part is that Darren then created one. And all it was old episodes of Batty and Me.
Don't go looking for Batty and Me anywhere.
Someone keeps finding it.
Especially not on Pornhub.
Getting notifications that we got new views. Who's doing this? Why are you doing this? Anyway, sorry.
So... speaking of Spider-Man a little bit earlier, Spider-Man Homecoming has its latest trailer out, and it looks like a Spider-Man movie. You know, I like the focus on the character of Peter, so I'm hoping they can hold on to that for as long as they want. I don't have a problem with Michael Keaton. I don't have a problem with the way they're doing the Vulture, but at the same time that I don't have really a problem with that, I wonder if they're going to lose the character of Peter in trying to bring out these big bads. It might actually be a little bit better to kind of twist the Uncle Ben bit, you know, with great power comes great responsibility, but then to realize that no matter how responsible you may try to be or how powerful you are, you can't save everyone. You know, that would be a real crisis of conscience, because if he's looking up to Iron Man and Captain America, who are doing these magnificent big things, but
it is. think that the poster could use more Iron Man. I mean, there's only like two semblances of Tony Stark in there. We can definitely cram more Iron Man into this movie.
We probably could.
We could probably just make it an Iron Man 4 and be done with it. We
probably could. Yeah. Iron Man 4 featuring Spider-Man.
Yeah. That poster's a mess.
So Netflix is doing an animated Castlevania series, and it looks kind of like anime.
It looks pretty good.
Yeah. I didn't play the games. I didn't have anything against them. I just didn't play them. But it seems it's going to involve Dracula in some way, shape, or form. So, good on him. Speaking of Dracula, the Universal Classic Monsters are getting a shared universe called the Dark Universe. The only thing that bothers me about this, I thought they were already part of a shared universe.
Yes.
Because they're supposed to be happening in the real world.
Yes.
So, it is what it is. If it means that Universal is going to be kind of redoing some of these classic stories, I would not mind seeing a modern telling of Dracula, you know, from the book, you know, looking at trying to create that story again, because the Gary Oldman one wasn't bad. You know, I think that
it had its issues. I'm not going to lie,
everything does. But I would love to see a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, like a no joke, do that story. I think it would work out really well. So in the realm of things that we've neither asked for nor wanted, we might very well be getting a Top Gun sequel. Tom Cruise supposedly confirmed it. Joseph Kaczynski, he was the guy who directed Tron Legacy, is the front runner to direct. I got two statements on the matter. The first one, no Kenny Loggins, no deal.
Yeah, agreed.
Well, yeah,
agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And number two, I think this is mostly in place so that Tom Cruise can relive some of his glory days. You know, I'm kind of hoping to see him also do a sequel to Risky Business, because there'll be nothing like old man thighs dancing in dancing in briefs to Bob Seger. Bob
and,
Seger,
you
right?
Know, and yeah, yeah, and no Seger, no deal.
No Seger, no deal. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
You respect the Seger,
right? And then Days of Thunder, maybe, and we'll see Tom Cruise, you know, drive cars really fast. And
room, room.
But in terms of actors who are living their glory days now, has anybody else caught Stephen Amell on the Ninja Warrior?
Oh my God, that was the best.
I'm going to let Darren talk.
That was the best. So Stephen Amell for years has been saying he wants to do Ninja Warrior. And if you've ever followed this guy on social media, he's pretty dedicated to working out and pretty...
More so than I am.
He does most of his own stunts on Arrow, so it's already impressive. So Celebrity Ninja Warrior was a few days back on Red Nose Day. And yeah, Stephen Amell participated and he blew through the celebrity course like it was nothing. He had this celebrity handler with him. She had completed the American Ninja Warrior course, I think like last year or a couple years before. And the idea is Celebrity goes through one obstacle and then they wait for the handler to catch up. He's like halfway down the course by the time that she catches up. He's stopping not to catch his breath, but so she can catch up to him. Completes everything on the first try, including the warped wall, hits the buzzer. Now remember, each obstacle you pass, you raise like $5,000 for charity. After he finishes the obstacle course, he asks if he can keep going because they've got the real course attached to the back of it. And he proceeds to like annihilate the salmon ladder in just a few moments. He ends up raising $35,000 for charity. Pretty cool.
Nice.
That is awesome.
They had him mic'd up. He's halfway through one of the new obstacles when I guess he decides he can't go any further. So he looks at the audience like, this is about to end. You've been a great crowd. Thanks for coming out. And then just kind of drops into the water. Super fun run. You should find it. We've got it on the Facebook page, facebook.com/geekcave. Stephen Amell is a ninja warrior. He's probably the closest thing we have to an actual Batman right now.
Or a Green Lantern.
You mean
a Green Arrow. Oh, man, I had that joke just right there, sitting there. I didn't have it written down.
Chad,
it's,
go to...
It's been a good run.
Chad, go to the shame corner.
No, let him finish the segment first.
No. Here's the rest of my notes.
I ain't finished.
Should have written in the joke.
The part of Chad will now be played by Droopy Dog.
Welcome to the movie segment.
Certainly not my first mistake today. It won't be my last. I didn't make enough sausage gravy for breakfast. So a new Charlie's Angels movie is coming. That part is less interesting to me than the director being Elizabeth Banks. She's more known for being an actor, but I'm excited to see another female-led movie being helmed by a female director. It's too early to know for sure right now, but because at the time we're recording, it's not been released, nor have the reviews, but it sounds like Wonder Woman is getting good responses.
Yeah.
From the early Twitter feeds, the early response, you know, people are just kind of saying, I can't go into details, but I liked it. Or, you know, slow first act, more than made up for in later, you know, later on. So in a world of hope, maybe we can expect more female directors to make their marks on an industry and in a genre that they've previously been denied for this reason, that reason, or the other. We're going to talk about one of those reasons now being people who have our general genetic makeup being just awful people.
Dudes are dicks.
Dude bros are jerks.
Yeah. So what is it? The Alamo Draft House?
Yeah.
The Alamo Draft House.
Yeah.
One of the great ideas to hit cinema in the past 10 years.
Watch a movie while having a beer. That's great.
And being able to order food.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great idea. Nice little fusion. They decided to have a women-only screening of Wonder Woman.
Why not?
Gee, I wonder why.
I'm not even going to say the gee, I wonder why. Women's nights, the ladies' nights at bars and clubs.
Yeah.
Always bring in money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Always. Because sometimes you just want to dance without a dick poking you in the side. You know, you don't want to be sharked in the middle of, you know, Gangnam Style or whatnot.
But yeah, they decided to do this, and predictably it is met by a bunch of whiny dude bros online.
You're so sexist.
One of which I actually saw on Twitter announce that he had bought a ticket and was going to try to crash it, and that if they told him he couldn't come in, he was going to throw a fit, despite it clearly saying women only. You know, we should be past this by now.
We should, but we are not.
So you're upset that someone gets to see a movie a few days earlier than you, and you're so upset that it happens to be someone of the opposite gender. There's a lot like Gamergate. Yeah. Or just kind of like that whole mentality from, it seems, male geeks in particular, where it's like, we want girls to be a part of our stuff. Wait, no, girls can't be a part of our stuff. Guys, it's the first, not the first female superhero-led film. People are reporting that it is, and it's clearly not. Elektra, Catwoman. But it's the first probably good female-led superhero film.
And I think it's the first,
with the first female director. With
a female director.
Yeah.
So we might say first female-led in that way, in the behind the camera.
But don't we want more people to get involved with this genre? Don't we want this kind of thing to be successful so then we'll get more of them? How many years have we been pushing for a Wonder Woman movie? And now that it's here, you guys want to take your 2-inch manhoods out and like demand that you should be allowed to see the movie early just because, they don't understand the medium like I do. This is reverse sexism. Shut up.
Well,
just shut the fuck up.
That's your one.
I don't care. That's my one. Self-righteous, sadistic, son of a bitch bastards. If you can't handle women, being in the world at all, go back to your mother's basement, have her tuck you in for a little nappy nap, and maybe when you wake up, you won't be such an asshole.
So there's that.
Damn it!
But who's going to explain how they got things wrong? Who if there's no men in the audience, who's going to explain that the tank is wrong?
Hi, my name is Darren. Fuck that! That's your one, Darren.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I was trying to behave this episode anyway. So, yeah, it's just, it boggles the mind that we, in the year 2017, are still pulling childish, playground level BS of like, well, if she gets to, I should get to. Okay, one, it's a movie. It's not like you're not going to get an opportunity to see it. Two, private screenings can invite whoever the hell they damn well please. Three, deal with it like an adult.
That's the thing. They're not adults.
I got to say, we didn't have anybody pushing back on us. The faith-based organization of which I am a part had a children's day at a local movie theater where we packed the house with kids.
Oh, now come on. You know, were there any adults?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You have to have adults when you have that many kids.
Yeah, that's true.
But we weren't.
They were in a working capacity.
But we didn't have.
You mean I couldn't have bought a ticket?
No, you couldn't have.
How dare you, sir? I am a child at heart.
It's effectively, we rented the theater. We rented the screen and the seats specifically
for
the purpose of showing the Trolls movie to a bunch of children who were getting out of school early. I would say this is not really any different.
No.
This is
the theater choosing who they want to serve.
Well, this is a theater effectively saying, you know what, we're going to rent this out to ourselves.
Yeah.
And because as a public business, they are obligated to serve the entire public. You know, and they do that except when they have these special events, and that's exactly why it's a special event. This is not them saying, you know, never do we allow men into this. Never, you know, you can't say that any more than you can say we're not going to let, you know, an African American or Asian American, we're not going to let, you know, somebody who's gay in here. You can't say that. You can't do that unless you have this particular type of special event that is saying, here is the.
Yeah, it's essentially invite only.
Yeah. You know how there's like National Women's Month or, you know, stuff like that, but there's never a National Men's Day.
Yeah.
It's because every damn day is National Men's Day. If you have a penis, the chances are you are going to get so far ahead in life. It's insane. And especially if your like skin color is pasty. Oh, good Lord. Are you set?
Thank you, Lewis Black. And Louis C.K.
You don't know.
And George Carlin.
Shut up.
So.
Not you, Chad.
Of course.
Not you, Darren.
I get it.
Not our wonderful listeners, because you all smell great and you are not misogynistic assholes.
Right.
But if you know a misogynistic asshole,
pass it along.
Have them come see me. I'd like to tell them a story.
Have them download the movie segment of the Geek Cave podcast.
Not the comic one. We don't want to send them anything if they get it.
No. They don't deserve our love and stuff.
Love and stuff.
So,
well, we have stuff to give away.
I know. I thought it was.
It's not like they deserve our fluff and stuff.
By the showing sold out in hours. So they added another one.
Yeah. Good for
and
them.
And decided to go across the nation.
Yeah.
Basically, the Alamo Draft House across the nation is going to do Ladies Night.
Really, here's a rule of thumb. If you don't like it, go spend your money elsewhere.
Exactly.
And actually, if you don't like it, keep your mouth closed.
Yeah. Vote with your wallet.
Well, let me rephrase. If you don't like it and it's not injuring anybody, because that injury is important.
Yes.
And it's not injuring anyone. Keep your mouth shut. Don't publicize it. It might fail.
Yeah.
You know,
instead, you're giving it attention. Mm-hmm. Some people might not have known about it.
Do you know how many banned and challenged books I've read just because somebody threw a fit?
That was the only reason I read the Harry Potter books.
Well, you know, most of us, I would wager, wouldn't have even known about this because it was just restricted to the Alamo.
I don't have an Alamo draft house anywhere near me.
I don't either. But if I had the funds, I would certainly go there and find if they had extra tickets, I would buy them and give them to women.
Here, go see this.
Go see this. I'm going to go home now. Have fun. No strings attached. This you don't even know my name.
This is a trap, isn't it?
Nope. So. Talk to the manager. She's right there. Go talk to her. She'll vouch.
So, there is, I guess there's supposed to be an animated Jetsons movie coming. And it's found a director in Conrad Vernon, who co-directed Sausage Party.
Oh, this will go well.
I have no idea exactly what they're going to do here.
I've not seen Sausage Party. Jane, I've seen enough of it.
Jane, stop this crazy thing.
Yeah. My only hope is that they take the Jetsons in the vein of Sausage Party.
Ooh.
Because the last Jetsons movie that came out in like the 80s, 90s.
Oh, yeah. Not counting Jetsons go to WrestleMania.
No. I'm talking Jetsons, the
Jetsons
movie.
That was in the 90s, yeah.
Yeah, it sucked.
You thought?
What about Jensen's Meet the Flintstones?
Well, that was clearly the superior film.
Yeah,
of course.
It was. Okay.
So, well, anyway, Warner Brothers had hired Matt Lieberman to write the script in 2015, and they got a director in 2017, so we figured the movie will be released in time for Nissan to reveal their tie-in car that folds up to roughly the size of a briefcase.
I would buy that. My garage is small. I would buy it.
My garage is not small. I would still buy it.
So, do we have any other news? Not reviews, but news.
No, just a little bit of piggybacking on the Wonder Woman thing. Mm-hmm. There's also people complaining about the type of tank that she's holding over
it's
her head.
Wrong tank, Darren.
On the movie post. I don't care. It's a movie about an ageless Amazon who can deflect bullets with her wrists and, oh, by the way, lift tanks over her head. I think that's the smallest problem to have.
Really, the wrong tank, though.
I don't have anything else, Chad.
Okay. So, on May 23rd, 2017, we were informed that Sir Roger Moore had died. Though he spent more time as Simon Templar in the television series The Saint, Roger Moore is most recognized as James Bond. He played James Bond a stunning 7 times for Eon and began his tenure as 007 in the film Live and Let Die, the Bond film with arguably the best theme song.
I'm not going to argue with that.
Frequently derided for his Bond being among the silliest of the series, Roger Moore was exactly what the series needed at the time. Sean Connery had vacated the role, and Bond's next film, Honor Majesty's Secret Service, was a grounded movie, probably the most grounded of the Bond films until some of the Dalton stuff, and it completely underwhelmed at the box office. And so from George Lazenby's widowed Bond came Roger Moore's Bond, an agent so straight-laced, so heroic, so British, that the goofy one-liners and metaphorical winks at the camera were welcomed and celebrated. Over 12 years and 7 films, Moore played a Bond that was silly, sly, vicious, and charming. And as the prettiest and sweetest-smelling podcast audience in the world, Geek Cavers raise a vodka martini properly shaken to a great Bond, Sir Roger Moore. I thought that fitting.
Very nice.
Thank you, Roger.
Now we'll get into this.
Thank you, 007, for your service.
Alien Covenant. I went to see it. I love the original Alien film.
So do I.
I adore the second movie in the series, Aliens. I have a grudging respect for Aliens 3, considering all the crap that David Fincher had to deal with on the studio level. And while Alien Resurrection is not terrible, it is clearly the Superman quest for peace of the series.
Darren can relate.
So Prometheus started bringing things back, and we're staying away from the Alien v. Predator movies. Okay?
You should too.
Prometheus started bringing things back. You know, they functioned as a prequel to the worlds, and honestly, it acted as a pretty strangely adept melding of Greek mythology and Christianity, which, you know, email me. I'll write you a whole bunch about how those things happen. But the movie got a little lost in its own message, and so it left us with a lot more questions than answers. Alien Covenant does not leave us with more questions than answers because it's not deep enough to do it. It's an action movie that has the xenomorphs in it, but it doesn't bother to really ask serious questions at all. So to offer the good first, Ridley Scott, he's on point with this. The directing is good. The movie's well shot. Each scene is framed well to offer a particular tone. You don't get lost in it. If there's shaky cam, it's clearly there for a purpose, and it fits. And it's not very often. The creature design, the music, the world design, ship design, they're all spot on for what I expect of an alien movie. Unfortunately, that's kind of where things stop being really good. The story is the problem. Story and the character. Because a simple story, a basic story, that doesn't have to be a problem. I mean, Deadpool was a simple story. I mean, it was a hero's journey, you know, kind of thing. But it was done with aplomb. This movie, no plum. Not even a radish.
Aww.
The character we're most supposed to care for, you know, the new Sigourney Weaver.
New Ellen Ripley.
Yes, the new Ripley. She's... The only thing that we really get out of her is, you know, her husband dies first. That's the only defining characteristic she really has, and that makes her tough. but she's essentially a Mary Sue. You could have put Kristen Stewart in that role, and you would have had the same movie.
Please don't.
The rest of the characters aren't given enough screen time to really become real people, and the other characters with the most screen time, they're both robots, and they're not supposed to grow or change. They're not supposed to, you know. And so you get this movie where things happen, and action sequences and very frenetic kind of movements and panicking times and so forth, but no tension in it. Nowhere in it was I all that concerned about who's going to live or die. It's just kind of and the plot twist that is literally in the last 2 minutes of the movie, it's like, I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming the moment that robot, you know, showed up. I knew it. Which, unfortunately, was in the opening scene. So, the action's nice. The evolution of the aliens across the movie's interesting. Because what it seems to be doing, and what I think the point is right now. Now, I'll watch it a few more times, probably, but... Right now, what it seems this movie was doing was getting the aliens to the point where they look like the alien from the first movie.
Okay.
That's what it seems, because in this one, we get face huggers. We finally get the chest bursting kind of scene. We start getting this sense of, oh, okay, this is what how these things get to where they are. But it's a B-minus movie. It's only going to satisfy people who like the aliens movies without wanting to think about them too much. I'm not sorry that I saw it, because I was entertained for it, but I was entertained in the same way that we were entertained with the Transformers movies.
Yeah.
There was a lot of stuff happening. It's just kind of like, I like the aliens. And then it was always like, wait a minute. Oh, I got to think about this now. Darn it.
Hello, my baby.
So I'll watch it at least two more times. Once when I convince myself it's not as bad as I remember, because critically, this thing is doing very, very well. And I'm going to have to read more of the critical response to find out what they're seeing in it. And then I'll see it again when the next movie comes out to make sure I remember everything that's happening. And right now I went into this one hoping that this one was going to make Prometheus more watchable, because Prometheus had these problems with it. But they could be fixed with the second movie.
Yeah.
You know, Spider-Man, the first Raimi Spider-Man, it was kind of middling.
Yeah.
You know? But the second movie made the first one better. By association, like, oh, now we've got one big story. This is very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I was hoping that we'd do that. Maybe it'll take the third of the trilogy. So, and I know we're really long. I apologize. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. We've all seen it, right?
Yes. While I enjoyed it, I do have a problem.
Oh, boy. All right.
You know, we were talking about Wonder Woman lifting the wrong tank or whatever. Yeah, that's child's play because in the very first scene, you know, Earth, Missouri, 1980, off in the distance as they're driving down the road, you see this like power plant with these two huge smokestacks. Nowhere in Missouri in 1980 were those there. I'm from Missouri. I know this. I have friends who go in and restore and clean up such buildings. Nowhere in Missouri is there a power plant of any kind that has this sort of chimney structure. And not even in the surrounding states, in the surrounding area.
Justin, shut up.
Okay.
I'd like to say that I had to sit through 20 minutes of previews for this movie. That's too much.
Yeah, we had a lot too.
Now, it's good.
I think I had like three previews.
Now, so I want to give my thoughts, and then you guys can go ahead and talk about something that's not a factory. Is it as good as the first one? No. Is it better than Iron Man 2 or Thor 2? Absolutely, yes. Is it better than Cap 2? Yes, if you value the comedy more than the action and intrigue. If you like the action aspects, then Cap 2, I think, is ultimately a better movie. I had the plot twist figured out before Groot's dancing in the intro credits. I also think the soundtrack may be better this time around, but just barely. Just barely, if it is. So, it's definitely a go-see. It's still an A movie. It is probably, with Cap 2, it's probably... These are the kind of movies that break the sequel curse. And honestly, I think in this case, it's because it's not a commercial for anything else.
Good point.
This we're not watching Guardians 2 going, oh, what's going to happen in Avengers? You know, we're not watching this going, oh, what's going to happen in you know, Guardians 3 even? Outside of a single throwaway credit sequence that you don't even need, you know, for the rest of the movie. I would also recommend, if you're going to see this, then try to not have people sit behind you. Because people behind you talk. If you're sitting behind somebody, shut your whore mouth. If I have to go to another movie where I'm not going on opening night and somebody is talking behind me, I may very well find it within myself to beat them with a nightstick. I cannot express. This has now happened with Deadpool. This happened with Guardians. This happened with Civil War. Although a Civil War, there was also the person two rows in front of me who was using their cell phone.
You need to go to a different theater, bro.
This is three different theaters.
Oh no. What is wrong with you people?
They're just, well, it's not our listeners.
No, I know, but just in general. That's what I mean by you people.
I see. So, just frustrating. So, now, I went to see Alien Covenant. I sat in the back row. Nobody behind me. No talking.
Was there anyone in front of you?
There were. I think eight people.
All right. Theater, yeah.
Myself included. Because I went to the 1:20 showing on a Friday afternoon.
Good call.
Nice.
We saw Guardians at 12 o'clock, you know, at a noon showing. They had a 10:30 a.m. showing that if I thought I could make it, I would have...
See, I would
but go. But the theater is like 90 minutes away.
I would go to the 10:30 showings more often if my wife didn't love sleeping as much as she does.
Go without her.
Yeah, that's not an option.
Yes, hey, it is. I went to Covenant by myself.
My spouse and I somehow made a 10:30 showing on opening weekend.
Are you talking PM or AM?
AM.
Okay.
And my wife loves sleep probably more than your wife.
Okay. Have her talk to have your people talk to my people.
They talk to each other already. I don't have to have them talk. They're talking now.
Before we actually cross the hour marker, have we already?
No, we're at 39 minutes.
Oh, excellent. We've got time then.
Guardians 2.
Yeah.
I hesitate to say it's better than the first one.
Mm-hmm.
In only that I think I enjoyed the story arc in the first one more. Okay. At least it was more of a surprise, maybe. Because the first Guardians, I went in not knowing what to expect. I didn't know much about the characters. I didn't know if this would be good. Guardians 2, it had, like you said, a predictable story arc. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, you can pretty much tell right from the beginning, okay, this is how things are going to play out. And it's just, I don't know. I got the emotional beats. They all hit me the way that they should have. I was engaged throughout. But I just feel like the first one was a little bit better.
And that's okay. No, I agree. I'm not saying it's better than the first.
Yeah.
Very seldom is a sequel superior to the first. There are instances, mm-hmm. but they're rare. That doesn't mean that this one is bad.
No, no means.
Yeah, this is and for Guardians of the Galaxy, this is really good. It's what you expect. We didn't know what to expect with the first one, just like you said. This one, we kind of had an idea going in. Okay, these are the characters. This is probably the feel we're going to get overall. And they stuck to that. They have, you know, like a Guardians Bible that they follow, yeah. basically. And it was true to form. It was witty at times, funny at times, you know.
I think the big emotional moment toward the end of the film that I'm not going to spoil it if you haven't seen it, but we all know what I'm talking about. I think it just felt like a bit rushed with this one particular character. Because in the first film, you don't see much of this character. And what you do see, he's an asshole. And then all of a sudden, I'm supposed to care about this character and relate to this character when this character really hasn't shown me any reason to until 5 minutes before this character's arc is over. And I guess for me, it was just a little, wow, you guys could have done more with that.
Yeah, but there are times in life when that's the case.
No, it's like I know.
You have a neighbor who lives, you know, across the street, and they never talk. You think they're the biggest asshole in the world, and then something happens to them, and you find out all this wonderful stuff about them. Like, oh.
Right.
Oh, wow. I should.
But I think it would have at least impacted me or impacted some in the audience more if we'd got kind of a more balanced presentation.
And I get it. But overall, I mean, everything Chad said, I agree with. Especially the soundtrack. It I don't know if it's better, but it's really close. There's no David Bowie in this one, but you get ELO, so it's
yeah.
It's not a fair trade, but it's a good trade.
I'm in fear that I might be getting a little burnt out on superhero films. Because mm-hmm. I would give this a B+. And I don't really have a good reason why, because it's very quotable.
I don't look at this as a superhero movie. To me, this doesn't fall into the realm of the Iron Mans, the Batmans, the Captain Americas, the Spider-Mans, the super whatever. This is a sci-fi comedy adventure all on its own. It only tangentially ties into the Marvel universe. And those are just with, you know, hidden gems.
Mm-hmm. I saw what you did there. Yeah.
Literal hidden gems. So, I mean, if you never saw the rest of the MCU, you could watch these now proposed three movies all on their own, hopefully, and be just fine.
Could I just say, dang it, lost my train of thought. So, no, I can't. Apparently, I can't say it. Oh, I'm back. So, by now, you should know, if you go to a Marvel movie, there are going to be things after the movie. I don't know why it bothers me as much as it does, but it almost enrages me. Almost. It at least annoys the crap out of me when the credits start and half the theater gets up and leaves. What are you doing? Where are you going? It's not over. Sit your butts back down. Come on. We've been through this. This isn't a DC film. Sit down.
My response was watching, and there were five credit scenes.
There were a lot.
And so it was funny to watch how many people got up after each one, thinking that was the last one.
It's like, until they actually, until you see the FBI warning at the end.
It's not over.
It's not over.
Hey, we don't have an FBI director. You can copy as many VHS tapes as you want right now.
Mm-hmm.
No one's going to stop you.
I'm sure
this is not actual legal advice, by the way, and we do not.
The Geek Cave Podcast legal team has strongly recommended not making copies.
We do not encourage or support piracy in any form, including space piracy. Mm-hmm. Chad, continue.
Arrgh.
All I have is the random movie, unless you got more reviews to give.
Can't.
And now, it's time for Chad Savage's Random Movie Review.
So, for those just tuning into the Geek Cave podcast, willkommen. Over the course of this year, 2017, in an effort to become a little more cultured, a little bit more refined, a little more je ne sais quoi, I've been watching movies.
A little more the French call, I don't know.
I've been watching movies from the American Film Institute's Top 100, the 2007 list. This month found number 16 on the list, The General, starring Buster Keaton. So, this film from 1926 tells the story of Johnny Gray, a man with two loves in his southern heart, his girlfriend Annabelle Lee, maybe fiancé, and his locomotive.
That is not a euphemism, folks. It's an actual train.
The General. And so the story opens up. Civil War is basically started, you know.
Yay!
Fort Sumter's fired on, and Johnny is prohibited from joining up because he's more useful to the Confederacy as an engineer than he is as a soldier.
But I want to kill some. The story is based in the South, by the way.
Yeah,
but I want to kill some Yankees.
The thing is that nobody tells him why he's being rejected, and so everyone just assumes he's a coward.
Gotta get him some super Southern serum.
Yeah. So a year into the war, his fiance, who has said that she doesn't want to see him again until she sees him in uniform.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Harsh.
Is
I love you, but I want you to go off and die.
Is on his train, the General, and when they stop for lunch, you know, stop the train 20 minutes for meal or whatnot, the train is stolen by some Union spies. And so Johnny sets off after him with the aim of getting both of them back. He starts on foot, then he commandeers a sidecar, you know, one of those where you pump up down.
Yeah.
His girlfriend was kidnapped accidentally, and you missed.
Right.
Yeah. She was on the train.
Yeah. She was on the train. Then he steals a guy's bone shaker bicycle. It looks like a penny farthing. But
big wheel in the front, little wheel in the back.
Gotcha.
Made almost completely of wood. And eventually he takes another locomotive to chase after it. And I know what you are thinking, gentle listener. You know, what good is a chase movie on a railroad track? The best you can do is catch up, not overtake. And that, my inquisitive friends, is part of the genius, really, when you get down to it. Because Buster Keaton kind of has his, if you call it a niche, it is being steady in the face of oppression or wacky hijinks or whatnot. So the first half of the film is basically Keaton's, you know, Johnny Gray chasing down his own locomotive into Union territory and rescuing Annabelle before spending the second half of the movie being chased by the Union as he as he gets his train and tries to bring it back home. You know, and while he's doing the chasing, while he's trying to get the girl back, everything goes wrong for him. The Union soldiers are very adept at changing this track or putting these things in the way or doing this, that, and the other. But on the way back, suddenly Keaton's in the position of power. And it's like he's using all these things that he's learned in avoiding the previous traps to create things to cause the Union to become bumbling, you know, bumbling Yankees. The climactic scene, which is not actually the battle, I don't think. The climactic scene, I think, is the collapsing bridge with the train on it.
Yeah.
Because this is based on a true story. You know,
an actual thing that happened in during the Civil War when a train was stolen and guy went and got it back.
All right.
Kind of thing.
Feel good story.
Yeah.
Choo-choo.
Now, along the way, we get to see Keaton's outstanding athleticism on display the entire film. I mean, this is the when this guy runs, there's a part of me is like, did they speed up the camera? No. No, they did not. That's just really how fast he runs.
My name is Buster Keaton, and I'm the fastest man alive.
In 1926, he very well might have been. But it's awe-inspiring to watch all of these stunts that he's doing. I mean, he's doing his own stunts throughout. And some of these things are ridiculously dangerous. You know, the when they're on the bridge and he's jumping over a fire and goes down through the... Well, he might not have actually been on the bridge at that point, but he's still jumping over real fire.
I wonder how many takes it took.
I bet not as many as you'd think. Keaton's early childhood was with vaudeville, where he was literally thrown, you know, by his family members and beaten up, and he learned to take falls.
Yeah, fastball special.
Yeah. So, he overcomes, yada, yada, yada. The movie is a simple story with a long chase sequence. You know, that's fine. Simple stories can be good if executed well. It's a silent film from the height of the silent era. This is now considered probably one of Buster Keaton's best movies. I can see why. It is a very well done story. It's an hour and 16 minutes long, and I almost don't realize that it's a silent film because it's so engaging. If it wasn't for the place cards that get sent up every now and again when they need to actually say something, you just go and listen to the music and watch the action, and it's self-explanatory. You could do worse than watching this one if you want to dip your toe into the silent film era. The General's found a home on the AFI list. It's found a home on the National Film Registry with the Library of Congress for films that have cultural value. And the biggest problem with silent film for me is I can't really describe it. You know, I can't tell you the memorable quotes. I can't tell you what's going on because it's all sight gag. All of it. So to try to explain one of the jokes or one of the things, because Buster Keaton was a serious character. He plays serious characters in a wacky world. And this is kind of what's going on here. I wouldn't say that Buster Keaton's character was funny. No. It's just he was in these weird situations.
No, his reaction to the silliness
is what
makes it funny. Yes. It's
when a scene in which there is a boxcar in front of him. And so he changes the track so, you know, that he can get past it. And he does so, and yet the boxcar stays in front of him because the track comes back around. And he looks in front, and then he looks behind, and then he looks in front. And his facial expression never changes outside of, like, his eyes. Just this little bit like, what the... But one of the early jokes, so he's an engineer. He gets down off the train, and he's getting ready to go see his fiance. He's going to go see Annabelle, and there are these two boys, these two kids, that are just following him in lockstep. I mean, look at like an early Marx Brothers kind of thing, where he's walking, they're just right behind him. And then Annabelle's behind them. He doesn't realize that she's back there. So they get there, and it's Buster and the two boys and then his fiance, and he knocks on the door and she's there. You know, when he looks around, she's there. And if this had been Charlie Chaplin or something, there would have been like a great big wacky double take or a, you know, some kind of jump or something to indicate, hey, this is funny. Mm-hmm. Laugh here.
Ding.
he just kind of raises his eyebrows and, you know, a greater interest, and they go in the house. And he sits on the couch with Annabelle, and he looks over, and there's the two boys that came into the house with them. For no reason, are just sitting there. And he just kind of this half sigh, like Al Bundy getting home and realizing the real work's about to begin.
Yeah.
And he just, this half sigh, and he stands up, and he walks over to the table, and he puts his hat back on, and he opens the front door and he gestures the boys to leave, and they leave, and he shuts the door behind him, takes his hat off, and goes and sits back. And it's this beautifully subtle and brilliant sight gag that I can describe but can't show you in the way that you need to. This is definitely a Be Like Me. You know, the movie is engaging. It is well worth your time. You could do a whole lot worse. I'd give it an A.
All right.
Highly recommended. The movie's available on Amazon Prime. In the words of, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, do it now. You know, so if you guys don't have anything else.
No, just a reminder to support our Extra Life page.
That's
again.
Right.
The gaming marathon coming up in September, but you can donate right now. Tons of prizes. GeekCavePodcast.com/Extra Life 2017.
Extra Life 2017.
That's right.
So for this has been the Geek Cave Podcast. For the magnificently mustachioed Kent Harris, for Darren, Justin, and myself, thanks for joining us. And remember, everyone is a geek for something.